Rockford Lestadian Lutheran Church is set in central Minnesota, 6 miles east of Buffalo, about equidistant from Cocado, Monticello, and Elk River congregations. This location brings lively congregation life because of opportunities to join in with the events in each congregation. However, Rockford has a schedule that is bustling with activities of its own. Regular Sunday morning and evening services, Monday evening elder service, Wednesday evening Bible class, and song services, bi-monthly congregation discussions, and home services in winter months. Mary's Day services, St. John services, youth days, and Bible study day, and various fundraising activities are a part of life in the Rockford congregation. The idea of a new congregation resulted from a need to find more room for the congregation, which was overflowing its church in Minneapolis. Families that had moved west of Minneapolis found it challenging to attend Bible class and other evening activities because of the distance, and the thought of a new congregation was exciting. The Minneapolis congregation appointed an interim board of trustees in August 1990 to guide the process. A list of 53 members was compiled for the new Rockford Lestadian Lutheran congregation. They first formally established a congregation and then searched for a meeting place. A board of trustees was selected in the fall of 1991. The members of this first board were David Nevela, Ken Carvenin, Greg Fuller, Richard Hendrickson, Ray Warnemy, Don Locasa, and Ryan O'Neamala. The new congregation began meeting in the Rockford Township Hall and then rented the Delano Middle School. Dedication services were held in March 1992 at the Delano School. Over 900 people attended. First speakers were selected. Ray Warnemy had been serving as a speaker for the Minneapolis congregation and was asked to serve as the first speaker of the new congregation. 6 months later, the congregation called Randy Herla to also serve as a speaker. Bible class, Sunday school, day circle, and home services were organized. Then, an exciting development happened. Gullivy and Susan Tarnanen offered 5 acres of land as a gift on which to build a church. This gift was gratefully accepted. An additional 5 acres were purchased. Rockford congregation now had a place to call home, but needed a building. This set off a flurry of action in this group full of energy and dreams. The building committee was expanded to include coordinated fundraising and a design element for developing building plans for the church. Ryan O'Neamala was serving as the chairman of the board and congregation. He was asked to be a project manager of the construction. You will hear him next talking about beginning phase one of the building project.
Advance fees. I am going to ask you a few questions about your role in the new congregation that was established back in 1992, Rockford Lestadian Lutheran Congregation. You were serving as the chairman of the board, and you also were requested to be the project manager. What was the feeling in the congregation as you began planning to build a church?
I would say a lot of excitement. by all members. There's just a lot of enthusiasm to do it because we've been renting a school facility for a number of years, and we really wanted to have our own place to meet.
How did this impact your life personally? That had to be a real commitment. Did it feel daunting or doable?
I would say looking back, it felt it was doable. I was younger, had a lot more energy, and I never felt like it was too daunting because it happened in steps. You know, if you look too far ahead, it can be daunting, but if you take it a little bit at a time.
Were there moments of really feeling overwhelmed where everything seemed to be happening at once?
I would say during the first phase, I don't recall that happening. Rockford Church was built in two phases. We built the dining area wing with the kitchen, unfinished kitchen, as our first building phase. That was, you know, of course, had restrooms and so on. And that one didn't feel like it was overwhelming at all. That went, I'm thinking, surprisingly well. But the second phase, that's where I got burnt out, I guess, to put it that way. But fortunately, we had members that were able to step in when I needed to step away from it.
Are there any examples of when you felt God's guiding hand very closely?
During the process, I can't say that I did. And it often, as it is in all parts of our life, we don't see God's hand, at least for me personally. I don't see it until I look back. And I felt the same way about how our church project went. One example, the donation of the land. I feel that God had a hand in that. The time frame that the first building was paid off for, we paid it off in a much shorter period of time than we thought we would. I believe God had a hand in that. Again, when you're in the middle of it, you don't see it. But looking back, you say, yes, that happened. And paying off that first mortgage on the first phase construction then gave us the momentum, if you will, to go on to phase two planning for the sanctuary.
A building can't be built on wishes and prayers. It takes money. How is this small new congregation going to get the funds to build the size of a building that was needed? Many fundraising ideas were implemented, including service auctions, garage sales, road rallies, ice fishing contests, a cookbook, and many others. Many fondly recall the Western dinners which were held for several years in the nearby Tarnanen barn. Rockford is sometimes referred to as the church that was built by pasties. A pasty is a meat pie. Rockford's pasty is a crust filled with ground beef, diced potatoes, and carrots, onions, and salt and pepper, and sometimes added rutabaga. Congregation members began making pasties at the Minneapolis church and selling them to the public at craft sales and community celebrations. Almost 4,600 pasties were sold in 1993. In 1994, ladies were interviewed about pasty making on two different radio stations, and orders increased dramatically. The total number of pasties sold in 2002 was 11,650. The pasty fundraiser has served as a continuous source of income for the building fund and later for the general fund. Rockford continues to sell pasties at their annual Saturday Market Bazaar in the fall and spring, and monthly curbside sales throughout the year.
I'm visiting with Don and Miriam Locasa about pasties. They have been involved in the whole process of pasty production and advertising and sales for many, many years. Miriam, can you tell me how that all got started?
Well, in 1991, Noella came from Seattle to our congregation, and she brought the Seattle pasty recipe. And Noella and I decided that'd be a good fundraiser for our congregations. And we knew how to bake the pasties, but where were we going to market them? And we had told the Hennepin County that we were going to start selling them at the Maple Grove Farmers Market. So we set up a little tent there, and we sold our pasties out of coolers. That same summer, we sold pasties out of coolers at Earl Brown Heritage Center in Brooklyn Park, at Buffalo Days, and at the Buffalo Home and Garden Show. During the Buffalo Day sales, we rented a Buffalo church kitchen to bake a few pasties. The ladies drove the hot pasties to our little tent in downtown Buffalo, where we had a toaster oven, and we handed out warm samples to get people acquainted with pasties. In the meantime, Noella was running around with a little red wagon filled with frozen pasties selling them. So our first summer of sales were very successful. Now, our biggest boost in sales was when Sue Grangrath and Doris Mackle were live in WCCO with Steve Cannon during his afternoon show, The Cannon Mess, on April 8, 1994. None of us pasty ladies were prepared at all for all the orders we received. The gals had given my number, Miriam Locus's home number, on WCCO. My home phone rang nonstop for 3 days straight. People were ordering two hot pasties for supper in St. Paul, four frozen pasties in White Bear Lake, orders from Wisconsin and from all over the Twin City area. I didn't know what blood pressure was to that point, but I called Don and I said, oh, what can I do? And he said, just take down their phone numbers and tell them we'll call back with delivery information. Greg Bratt was in charge of delivery with the help of his father, Doug Bratt. Many of us mothers did pasty deliveries also. At this time, the pasties were selling for $3 each. In 1994, we sold approximately 10,000 pasties and 12 bakings for a profit of $17,500. We were very excited. The kitchen was finally completed in 2005. Now we could start baking pasties in our own kitchen after renting the kitchen in Minneapolis for 12 years. We were so thankful to have our own kitchen to bake in with a walk-in cooler and a freezer. That certainly has blessed the Upper Congregation. Steve Cannon even mentioned our congregation several times on WCCO afterwards, and we still have customers coming to buy who heard from us 33 years ago on WCCO radio. We sold 5,132 pasties during the month of January of 1996. We had a celebration after that. God certainly has blessed the Rockford congregation all these 33 years with continued wonderful sales to many of our steady old customers even.
Between 1994 and 2006, we had a profit just from pasties, $244,118. This was during the years that I was treasurer. From 2007 until 2017, we had a pasty profit of $163,625. I received that number from Lars Anderson. So for that time period, 94 through 2017, the total pasty profit is $407,748.
It's the Cannon Mess on a Monday. Thanks for joining us in the basement studio. Well, Susan Grangrath and Doris Mackela came up here. They're from the Buffalo, Rockford area, and they are pasty makers. And it's the Rockford Lestadian Lutheran Congregation. They call themselves... Well, this would be the name of their church if they get it started. And so they brought me down some pasties today, and I have them right here in front of me. And Dan Robotham is our engineer, and he's never tasted a pasty. So come on in here, Dan. And I'm going to find out now, Susan Grangrath. Now, this Dan Robotham is coming in here. He is a big eater, and I wonder if we're going to be able to tempt him here. Oh, you can sit there, Susan. He can stand. All right, Dan, come over here and get by that microphone.
Don't worry, Ella.
Let me explain.
I'll never turn down food, Steve.
I know
you
know
that.
Now, before you dig in, I want to tell you what you have there. We have, it looks like, doesn't it look to you like a little football?
Yeah, it does kind of. It looks like a little...
Deflated?
A little puffy, but yeah, kind of a flat football, I suppose. Sure.
Now, Susan, just come over here a second. What have we got in the pasty, the deflated football, which is the pastry?
Well, basically there's potatoes, carrots, ground beef, some seasoning, salt and pepper, mm-hmm. and that about does it with the pie crust around the whole...
The whole deal,
The whole deal there, yeah.
Susan Granroth, come over here to the microphone, my dear. She's a tiny little thing, and I want to get you up there real close. If we want to buy these pasties, all we got to do is put them in the oven and then heat them, right?
Right.
That's the best way, better than putting them in the
microwave. You can do that. The crust gets a little...
hard.
Well, no, more soggy-ish.
Soggy-ish?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
The crust gets nice and crisp in the oven.
So you put the frozen pasty on a cookie sheet and you bake at 350 for 45 minutes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. $3 a pop?
$3 a pop. It's a meal in one.
Goes towards your... You think you can sell enough pasties to erect a church?
I don't know. We've been selling quite a few in the last few months.
Have you?
About once a month we make 600 to 700 of them. And
wow.
They've been going.
Do all the women do it in their various homes? Is that it?
No, we do it...
Oh, the bakers. I see
we
that.
We do it...
Fresh rising bakers do it for you. I dig it.
No, we do it. But congregation members do it, but we use their kitchen.
I got it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can you sell them by the dozen? You ship them to them? Is that the
idea? Yeah, we can deliver them.
Or deliver them.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that'll be fun.
But they can just, try one or two if they'd like to start with.
Oh, I know they'll like them. I mean, you cannot dislike a pasty. I've never had a bad pasty.
And it's easy. I mean, for working people, just, take one from the freezer, put it in the refrigerator while they're at work, and then pop it in the oven for whatever it is, 20 minutes, 20 to 30 minutes, and they'll have a meal.
Construction of Phase 1 to build an assembly hall commenced in April of 1998. Three construction crews of 9 men worked diligently 1 week at a time. Often, during the building project, one could drive by at night when people were working and see the church lights from far away. Through it all, there was a sacrifice of personal and family time and finances. Sister congregations also generously donated their money, labor, and materials. First services were held in this gathering place in February 1999, after 7 years of holding services in Sunday school in a rented facility. Membership had grown to 159 adults and over 250 children. Before the morning service began, all the chairs were occupied, and many were standing along the walls. A feeling of excitement was palpable as members gathered for their first service in the new church. Song services were requested for the evening, and the attendance was high. The mortgage was paid off more than 4 years earlier than expected, so the second phase of construction to the church was planned. A groundbreaking ceremony happened in May 2002 for an 8,500-square-foot sanctuary capable of seating over 600 people in benches. In January 2003, the steeple and spire were raised into position.
Rhino, now we're approaching the second phase of the building project. You are still project manager for this phase as well. Was the energy in the congregation as high this go-round?
I think it was, because we had grown in membership. Other people had joined our congregation from neighboring congregations or had moved into the area. So yes, I believe there was as much energy and enthusiasm for phase two. We were kind of crowded already in phase one, so that was also a part of it.
So again, this is a big commitment on your part and everyone who worked on the project. How did this impact the family, and how was the family cared for during this time?
I have to say that most of the family responsibilities fell on Sarah's shoulders during this time. I wish it could have been different, but she supported me throughout this project, phase one and phase two both. And when she saw that I needed help, she made sure I got that help that I needed.
What unexpected benefits happened that when you look back on you can see as that happened as a result of working so closely together with all the members that worked on the project?
I would say the biggest benefit is the relationships that were developed, myself personally, and I've noticed with other members of the congregation as well. When you work with somebody, you develop a relationship that becomes closer than if you would have just met them casually. So I would say relationships.
So that was a long, difficult project. How did you feel when the steeple and the spire were going up?
That was really exciting for me, myself personally, and others as well that had been serving on the building committee and other congregation members. We had quite an audience watching as the crane lifted up first the steeple and then the spire on top of the steeple. It was amazing.
First services in the new sanctuary were held on May 4th, 2003. Nearly 700 attended. Dedication services were scheduled for St. John's weekend in June. Emotions spilled out in tears for many during the ceremony. A song written especially for this occasion by Gail Corpy touched deeply.
I'm visiting with Laura Skoog, who was involved in design planning for the new church and involved in choosing color schemes and other aesthetic aspects. You, Laura, likely spent many, many hours on this and poured your heart into this work. You witnessed the birth of the congregation and how it's grown through the years. What were your feelings when you attended the dedication, the culmination of the efforts of so many?
Well, I would say my obvious and strongest reaction was obviously complete joy and thankfulness to God. We as a congregation have prayed for years that we would have a house of worship. And as we planned and then became fruition that it started, there was many, many hours of volunteer labor. So then just to see it all at the end, it's all you can feel is thankfulness to God that He blessed us with our own congregation or our own church. So that would be my strongest and most obvious reaction, I think, that we all felt. And it was really special to be there with everybody, to feel the love and unity among the members. It was definitely special. I'd also say I felt humility. I think when you're tasked to work on this big of a project, sometimes it can get really overwhelming. You're not making decisions for yourself. You're making it for the whole congregation, what works best for everybody. How can we try and fit everybody's needs into the plan, into the design? So that's humbling there too. And to realize that in the end, we all put out effort, but really it's God that blesses the project. So we all have a small part, but it's really God that blesses it.
The choir is an active group in Rockford adding its beautiful music to Christmas and Easter programs, the Christmas dinner, music evenings, and other events. The choir is open to everyone, from young to old. It provides connection, purpose, camaraderie, a sense of accomplishment to all who participate. Mary's Day services in March and St. John's services in June are eagerly anticipated festive annual events. St. John's services has drawn crowds to fill the church and spill out into a tent outside. Now, more often, St. John's services are held at the nearby Silver Spring site, which can more easily accommodate a large crowd. A Youth Days event was traditionally held in August, but is now held the last weekend of December. It draws youth from around the area. The Saturday Market Bazaar, held twice a year in November and May, attracts people from all around. There is an urgent call from the organizers early in the fall and spring to begin making crafts, soaps, lotions, gift baskets, sewing, knitting and crocheting, artwork, woodworking, leather items, and more. Organizers order items such as fin candy, glassware, and napkins. A tasty brunch, which includes egg bake, a fruit yogurt parfait, and delectables such as prune tarts and meringue cakes is planned, and baking shifts are assigned. Are there enough pasties ready? Christmas trees, winter greenery, wreaths, and potted arrangements add a splash of color to the scene. The dining area is transformed into a welcoming and festive room, which soon fills to bursting with shoppers. Christmas songs drift through the air from choir singing or the piano. "I come every year. I wouldn't miss it," says one shopper from Maple Grove. Rockford Congregation has currently approximately 351 members and 323 students in Sunday school. 14 ministers are actively serving the congregation. The members continue to sell pasties. Members love to visit long around the coffee table after evening services or Bible class. For many, it truly feels like home.
I'm visiting with Dawn and Florence Hollinen, who have been members of Rockford since the very beginning. And I'd like to ask you, Dawn and Florence, how has it been for you to witness the birth of a congregation and follow its progress through all these many years?
Well, it was very exciting to join the group that was looking to go forward with building a new congregation out here.
Yeah, it was really awesome to, you know, experience the excitement. Everyone was excited about the congregation, and everyone was willing to work. Four walls and a roof. That's how we started out.
As we started off, and of course had an architect, and thanks to design the building, and it was a huge amount of labor needed to build, and a lot of willing hands and people to give their time and their labor, and their and finances were also part of the construction. So another project I got was the cross on top of the building, was to weld that up, and that was a very, very enjoyable project for me. When I think of all the help and from the standpoint of giving speakers and teachers and kitchen help, and it is amazing.